This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
The New Hampshire Supreme Court unanimously reversed Adam Montgomery's second-degree murder conviction in the death of 5-year-old Harmony Montgomery. Yeah, I know. Not because anyone found new evidence, not because anyone is claiming he's innocent, because the trial court let the murder charge ride alongside a separate assault charge in front of the same jury, something that actually the defense of Adam Montgomery wanted. Well, the Supreme Court said the stronger case contaminated the weaker one, and now guess what? He's going to get a new trial. This is a ruling about trial mechanics, and there's no one better to talk to and walk us through what happened here than defense attorney extraordinaire and host of the podcast Defense Diaries, Bob Mata, to help break all this down. I know we were both reacting to this the other day on Twitter. The Supreme Court said they're going to be trying the murder case and the assault case. Obviously, the assault case was tied to this, but they said nope. It was prejudicial to have them next to each other tried at the same time, even though Adam's team asked for it. For people who don't speak courtroom, what does prejudicial actually mean? And how do the mechanics of this work? Again, considering the Adam Montgomery camp is the one who wanted these combined into one trial.
Yeah. I mean, in plain English, prejudicial is, you know, in the legal sense, doesn't just mean this hurts the defense. It means that every good piece of the prosecution's evidence hurts the defense. And that point of it, like legally prejudicial, means the jury used evidence for a purpose that the law forbids. And propensity is what I'm talking about. And, you know, for instance, you know, he beat her in July, which we obviously had evidence of, which is why I hate that guy probably more than any defendant. Yeah. I've got, like, in recent memory, and there's some horrific, horrific defendants we've seen in recent memory, but this guy with that adorable, beautiful little girl.
Yeah.
You know, but him beating her in July and then turning around saying, so he's the kind of man who would have beat her to death in December. You can't do it. It goes to propensity. It's one of the things that you can't use prior bad acts for. So, you know, the law, for lack of a better term, is basically allergic to that. Mm-hmm. And you can't convict somebody of crime B just because they've committed crime A. And also because he's a shitbag. So ultimately, you know, this thing landed on the fact that the charges were misjoined. They should have been severed. They shouldn't have been tried together. And ultimately they were. And it was a miscalculation by both the prosecutor and the judge, in the sense that they knew what evidence they were going to be presenting and that they knew what impact that would have on the jury. You know, it's like you can't show the types of injuries that Harmony sustained in the July occurrence and not expect that to bleed into the jury's mindset in terms of hating this guy, you know? And, you know, we refer to it as bootstrapping. You know, when you bootstrap another case onto another case in order to bolster that second case, it's just, it's not allowable in the law. As much as I hate this ruling, you know, and I do, because, I mean, that piece of shit didn't even show up for his own trial. He wouldn't come out of his jail cell, but I'm sure we'll get into that. So, but
yeah,
that's essentially what prejudice in this context means.
Help me understand the arc, Bob. I you know, because to me, again, I don't speak courtroom either. How do you then do it? Because all the prior things this individual did as a human being lead to who he was that actually did the even more horrendous thing of killing her. So, I mean, how do you separate those when it's all part of a whole of who he is?
I mean, that's the thing. Like, you, what you're talking about is propensity, like
right.
The whole of who he is. You can't use prior bad acts to show propensity. Like the dog, it's just not allowed in the law. you know.
Don't we see that other places though? I mean,
not if they can avoid it. You know, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. I mean,
like here's an example, just to try and throw in it. Like, okay, so Corey Richens' case, the sandwich beforhand.
Right.
You know, they're like, oh, he got sick and he survived. I know that. I mean, that was up. They were arguing whether that should be in or not. It obviously stayed. It was a separate charge. But I mean, the evidence, yeah, it was kind of there, kind of not, kind of at the same place. I mean, so we do see it in other cases. I guess what is really getting me on this is, and I totally understand your argument and the propensity and how that works, and I get it. But the fact that they are the ones who wanted these two things connected, that's what gets me on it. It wasn't the state that said, we're going to connect these. You have no, you know, they argued for it. The Montgomery side argued for it, or Adams side argued for it. That's the part that gets me. Okay, you asked for it, you got what you wanted, and now you're using this as a strategy to get another trial. Was this part of the strategy all along on the part of the defense?
I mean, if it was, it was a bizarre strategy.
You know,
I mean, like, ultimately, I think that they had to realize that in let me take a step back. I'm concerned about the retrial on the murder case because there is no additional evidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what we saw is what we saw in terms of the evidence that they're going to have. And in the second trial, they're not going to be able to use the evidence that they used in the first trial with respect to the July occurrence of him beating his child because she was wetting herself, you know, and showing the injuries that occurred. You know, as to your Corey Richens kind of analysis, I mean, with that particular set of circumstances, what we're talking about there is like a common scheme or plan. You know, like that's one of the things you could show. She had tried to do it before. Like, this is the evidence. She tried to poison him before with the sandwich. So that would fall under the reasons that you can use 404B in terms of, you know, motive, opportunity, you know, common scheme or plan. Those are things that the courts have said, yes, you can use this type of prior bad act testimony or evidence for, you know, in a separate case. And in this particular situation, that's just they couldn't get that to fit in any of the allowable aspects of being able to use 404B. So, you know, I'm concerned because of the whole Kayla issue, you know, you know, as to whether or not they're going to be able to prove this against him. You know, so
I mean, that's a big thing. I mean, the assault evidence was rock solid, multiple independent witnesses. The murder evidence rested almost entirely on Kayla Montgomery's testimony. Yep. Kayla Montgomery, not a great witness at the end of the day. You know, I mean, how big is the gap between those two evidence pools? You know, and why does that matter so much here?
Well, I mean, it matters massively because in theory she could be the one who actually committed the crime, you know. I mean that's ultimately where this thing's gonna lay. I mean, if you're the defense attorney for Adam Montgomery, you're pointing the finger at Kayla. Mm-hmm. You know, because she was the last one with Harmony. So you know, I mean, and that's obviously problematic for the state, you know, because you have a situation. Well, did she die as a result of what Adam had done before he got out of the vehicle, or did something happen in the interim, you know, and was that at Kayla's hand? And, you know, the problem with Kayla is, like you said, she's a bad witness. You know, she already pled guilty to perjury. She cut a deal and, you know, the bottom line is she was in that car too.
Yeah. And I want to get into that end of it in our next segment here, but yeah, go ahead, Robin.
I'm still struggling with this one just because of the whole prior acts thing to me. So Bob, what's the difference between like Stephen Stearns and the horrendous murder of Missy Soto and, you know, with SA involved with that little girl and this, you know, because they had to draw in his horrendous behavior in that arc in his life because it drew to the horrendous acts he did, you know, it one plus two plus three equals, you know, that. What's the difference between those types of cases and this?
Well, I think in the Stearns case, there was more evidence that, you know, he was the last one with her.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so what they're saying is, but for the fact that they put in this assault evidence,
yeah,
they wouldn't have been able to convict him.
If he had been the last one with her, would all of the prior bad act evidence be landing differently? Would the Supreme Court have looked at this differently had he just been the last person there? Is the fact that she was there, that's what the Supreme Court is saying? Yeah, but...
Right. I think it would have been more akin to the Stearns case. Right.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Because like that's the primary difference is Kayla. You know, I mean, like the fact that Kayla was in that vehicle, it's not as clear cut. So with Stearns, he's the last one with her. And, you know, they were able to geolocate where he was.
Right.
It was so ultimately at the end of the day, you know, the appellate court's going to look at that and say, all right, well, even if we found that this was an error, we're going to find that it was harmless error because the other evidence that existed in the case was strong enough to lead the jury to the verdict that it finally reached. So with here, the appellate court just didn't feel that was the case. They were like, look, if we take out this assault evidence, what do they really have on him other than he's a giant piece of shit, you know, which again, you can be a giant piece of shit. It doesn't necessarily mean you're a murderer.
So then who do you go after for the murder?
Well, I mean, they're going to go after Montgomery again. And, you know, that's why I'm saying I'm nervous about this murder case because it's not clear cut.
Well, I know. I get it. But it's just so befuddling to me that you know, death needs accountability. And who else? I mean, so just... I mean, okay, so they'll get him on an assault. I mean, okay. And yet there's no justice for the murder on that. It's
our system. I mean, it's interesting because like on the surface, it's so angry. It's so easy to get angry at this because it almost feels like our system says, yes, context is important some of the time, but other times it's not. It's such a gray area because a lot of times, Bob, it comes down to the interpretation of the law and who's interpreting it.
100%. I mean, that's the nutshell of what the law is.
Yeah.
I mean, in every criminal case you're ever going to watch, you're going to see two different sides interpreting the same law and set of facts in a completely different way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's literally what the law is. It's literally why cases go to trial, because two sides are arguing very different opinions as to what law should be applied, how the law should be applied, and what the facts and the evidence show in regard to that particular case. And, you know, I mean, that's every single trial you'll go to. I mean, most cases plead out.
Yeah.
And when they do, it's because one side, typically the defense, can't find a way to effectively argue that the facts and the evidence that exist in that case can be applied or looked at another way, you know? Mm-hmm. So at that point, you're looking as the defense attorney, say, well, you know, look, man, they got some pretty strong evidence. There's not going to be any way to kind of twist this thing into a position where we're going to be able to make a cogent argument that it could have happened a different way than what the state is saying happened. And in those cases, you're saying, you know, they got you. You know, so what I need to be doing as your attorney is trying to, and again, like I say this all the time, every case isn't murder, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of different crime that, you know, that may or may
how,
not.
How expected was this, you think, Bob? I mean, when you were watching this case originally, did you go, this is going to be a challenging one? Or do you think they stretched to make this happen?
I was concerned, you know, when I watch it, because going into watching that trial, I wasn't aware of the whole Kayla factor in the sense that I didn't realize just how involved she was in that relationship between, you know, Adam and his daughter, you know, and because I didn't heavily research that case going into it. So I kind of went into it blind and I hadn't been paying attention to any of the pretrial stuff that had gone on when, as Tony had said, the defense had originally requested the joinder, you know, but then they later on tried to undo it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, so they weren't dying on that hill. Right. You know what you're allowed to do. There's nothing.
You can change your mind. Yeah.
Totally.
I think one of the biggest things in a case like this, when you see a decision like this made by the court, is exactly what we were talking about earlier, of how this is all up to interpretation by the individual that's interpreting it. And we know that, but I don't think it resonates with most people, because it's not what they do for a living. You know, they're lay people, but once you see it, it's like you realize just how much the court system works that way. And that's why people get so outraged so often. We're like, well, this case over here went this way. This one's just like this. And it's not. Yeah. It's interpretation in both ways. It's almost like the adult criminal version of, well, my parents allow me to get away with this over here, and those ones don't. And it's all about who's controlling the rules and right. Who's interpreting them. And that is just, it's how it works, for better or for worse. That's what we're dealing with.
Why? You know, it's like out of all the things you could be doing right now that appellate courts could be doing and judges could be doing, you know, with all the bandwidth that can suck up your time, I'm just curious, like, why did this case come to that? What are your thoughts on that, Bob? It's like, why this one and not something else?
Yeah, I mean, when you're kind of looking at this case initially, the timing of the defense asking for it to, you know, for all the charges to be joined together, and they try it in one particular trial, and I'm guessing here, but I think initially it was probably early on in the discovery process. They were probably thinking, all right, you know, this thing's going to be a mess for them, because they knew about the whole Kayla situation, and they're hoping, look, we'd rather just try this at one time, have it turn into a big mess between, you know, Kayla, the assault that happens months prior, and as opposed to giving them two bites of the apple and asking for severance and saying, okay, well, we'll have them try these charges then, and then we'll do the murder later, you know, because at that point you're giving the state two bites at the apple. But then the discovery keeps coming back in. And then as soon as they're seeing just how powerful the assault evidence is and how emotion evoking that is going to be for a jury, they realize, nah, we can't do this, because if we don't sever these things, they're immediately going to impute the guilt from the assault onto the murder, and you're going down. And, you know, by that time, they couldn't undo it. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, like, had they not made that move to undo it in terms of saying, like, you know, we're fine with these cases mm-hmm. being joined, had they not done it, it would have been waived for the purposes right. of appeal. And we're not sitting here right now. But because they did try to have them, you know, severed at that point, it created the issue for appeal, which ultimately the appellate court ended up ruling on.
So, Bob, put on your you always have it on, your defense attorney hat for Adam. You were convicted of it. You're in jail. You think this, or part of it's behind you. You're moving on to other stuff. So, and I know what you're morally and ethically, you know, you're sworn to, but how do you go back in and do this again for someone who you know is a complete dirtbag? I mean, what's your ultimate goal that you're trying to do now if you're his lawyer?
I mean, if you're his lawyer, you're pointing the finger at Kayla. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. Because they're not going to be able to establish exactly when she died.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And you have this situation where Adam's out of the vehicle and she's still in the vehicle with Harmony. And there's that time frame there where you're not going to be able to show that, say, for instance, Kayla smothered her, just right. put her hand over her mouth and ended her life, you know, while he's out of the car. Right. I mean, who knows what's going on in that woman's mind?
How do you get there? Yeah, to beyond a reasonable doubt.
That's tricky, man.
It's
tricky.
And that's what we're going to be getting into in our next segment here. Your thoughts so far in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. Links are in the description. We'd love for you to weigh in. New Hampshire says it's going to retry Adam Montgomery for murder, but the retrial is not going to look like the first trial. The assault evidence, the prosecution's strongest material, the stuff multiple witness could testify to, out. What's left is a murder case built on the testimony of one woman, Kayla Montgomery, Adam's estranged wife, who went to prison for lying to the grand jury investigating Harmony's disappearance before cutting a cooperation deal. Bob Mata, defense attorney, is with us with an assessment on whether Kayla can carry a murder conviction on her own. That's the question the entire trial is going to be, retrial is going to be running on. I guess let's start here on Kayla. I get it. They're going to want to point the finger there, but she had already cut the deal to testify against, and I'm sure she'll be testifying against here with her own words, and she's going to be butchered by the defense for not being a reliable witness and cutting her 50 different ways in terms of her credibility. But at the end of the day, if you're truly wanting justice for Harmony, and if you're going to point the finger at Kayla, and let's say Kayla is the one that's responsible for her death, if we're going to play the cards that direction, allegedly, if she already cut a deal and she's the one who actually did this, and he's the one who was participating in the cover up for all those years or for that time period, could there even be justice if she's already cut a deal?
Yeah, I mean, there could be. Look, at the end of the day, you know, they're going to have to impanel a new jury. And I think most people in that area have probably heard of the case. Mm-hmm. So Adam Montgomery is not going to be a mystery. The facts of the case aren't going to be a mystery. Mm-hmm. Harmony is not going to be a mystery to most of these jurors. And in terms of rehabilitating a potential juror who may admit that they have some kind of bias coming into the case, it's as simple as a judge saying, look, you know, I understand that you may feel a certain way right now, but are you able to follow the law? And if that juror says, yeah, I'm able to put that aside and I'm able to follow the law and put that bias aside, the judge is going to say, okay, well, you're rehabilitated. So theoretically, you know, they could have a bunch of jurors that know exactly what the hell was going on in this case, mm-hmm. even without them. And they're not, look, and don't get me wrong, they are not allowed, assuming that the assault evidence is not going to be allowed in, they're not allowed to apply what they know outside of that trial to the way that their thought process works, but that's not reality. Like the law, I like to call it a legal fiction. It's that thing where, you know, I always use the term, you can't unring a bell. You know, you can pull a skunk out of the jury box, but the smell remains. And it's that concept, because that's how the human mind works. As much as they may say, okay, well, I'm not going to consider that, subconsciously, they're considering it. You know, as defense attorneys, you know this about jurors, because they're mm-hmm. human beings. You know, so ultimately, if you're stripping this case down to kind of just its core, you're looking at a no body homicide built on the word of one cooperating witness who has, you know, a perjury conviction. Mm-hmm. And that's the case at its core, you know, no confession, there's no remains, no eyewitness who also isn't a suspect. But when you look at, like, how can the prosecution rehabilitate a witness like Kayla, you lean into her, you know, you don't hide the warts, you put them out there on the front end. You know, you talk about, look, Kayla's got issues. You know, and I'm talking about if you're the prosecution, you front it. You don't mm-hmm. sit there and try to pretend it doesn't exist, because that's going to bite you in the ass. And you have her on direct. You say, you have her admitting, yes, I lied. And yes, I went to prison for it. And yes, I have a deal. And here is why you should believe me anyway. You know, so you have to turn her into somebody that the jury can trust, you mm-hmm. know, because you know who's not going to testify is Adam Montgomery.
Right.
So in that situation, you're going to have all of the facts that can come in terms of them doing all the insane shit that they were doing, dragging this poor deceased little beautiful girl around in a bag and putting her up in ceilings and all the disgusting shit that they were doing. You know, ultimately, what you're going to need is that jury to say, all right, is flawed as Kayla is, Adam's the monster here. And one of the two of them did it, you know, and you just have to have them land on it was Adam that did it. You know, so I think there's an end game here where it can end up with him getting convicted. But I mean,
but what if it wasn't Adam that did it? In all reality, he's a horrible human being. He's a monster to anyone and everyone around him. You know, he's a soulless blob of flesh. So what if he didn't do it? What if she did do it? And then what if he's found not guilty here? She's already cut a deal. Is there a way to turn around and go and charge her then for the murder? I mean, is there any levers that can be pulled there? Obviously, you know, new evidence might be the opening window for that, but you got to find it too. Or is she immune with the deal that she cut for testifying against him?
I don't know what her deal is.
Yeah.
So, okay. I mean, if it's like she got some kind of immunity.
We got to see what that is.
She did. Yeah. So, I mean,
right. But what yeah. type of immunity is, I'm not
sure.
Certain on it. But if it's I'm sure she didn't get full immunity, you know, okay. But if she got the type of immunity where it's like use immunity, or it just depends. Like, I don't even want to guess. If I know what type of immunity deal she got, then we'll know what they'll be able to use in terms of what she testifies to. Because, I mean, are we talking about a situation where they decide not to go after Adam, or they've gone after Adam, he is not convicted, and they're like, all right, well, now we're going to go after Kayla? Mm-hmm. Then you're stuck with the same situation that you had with Adam. In terms of you have the same problem, except now you don't have any witness unless they're going to try to strike a deal with Adam. But, you know, at that
could you prosecute both of them at the same time as for doing this together?
No.
No? Okay.
I don't think so. It's like, cause it's that same problem as to which one did it. Like which one, you know, the X
factor. And you need a witness.
Here, you need a witness. And the X factor here is if they could somehow find her body.
Yeah.
You know, like that is the X factor that exists in the world, wherein if they could uncover her body and get an ME, if they're still able to do some work and figure out what the actual cause of death was, which I don't know if it would be possible or not at this point in time. But at least it gives you a shot in generating some new evidence that could be brought forth in the case. Yeah, it's tough. And I don't want people, like, don't kill the messenger here. I have made it like abundantly clear, like Adam Montgomery is the guy where I'd love to get in a cage match with that guy. And like, I'm not even shitting you, man. Like, that is the guy I'd like to put on him exactly what he put on his daughter. You know, the law be damned. Like, so that's how I feel about this guy. Like, and he is.
Yeah.
He's so spineless. You know, the way that he just didn't come out of his cell and he just sat in his cell while this trial goes. He's just an awful human being.
I think it's time for Gen Pop for him, don't you? Oh, yeah. Don't you think it's time to move him out and smell the sunshine?
Yes. He is the guy you want in Gen Pop, no question about it, because he's not lasting long in there, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, so the drop charges were dismissed, other pending charges against her, felony theft by deception, welfare fraud, claiming harboring as a dependent, receiving stolen property related to firearms. She agreed to fully cooperate with prosecutors in any future state proceedings, including but not exclusively limited to testifying truthfully against Adam.
Yeah. So, but that doesn't go to like what type of immunity she got, if any, you know what I'm saying? So that's kind of the key to the whole thing in terms of whether or not they would be able to turn around and go after her, you know, because it's like when you think about the Adelson cases,
right?
Mm-hmm. Wendy got some form of immunity as well.
Right.
You know, which again, may limit them in some respects, depending on the type. And I can't remember at this point because I've covered so
many. I'm trying to deep search it, and it's not giving me exactly what the immunity is on this either.
Yeah.
Consciousness of guilt, hauling the body around as they did from place to place. And if you look in the details, it's insane. It's like the different jobs he had, he was like shoving her into like the ceiling of a pizza restaurant. It's horrific. utter, and it's bizarre as shit too. Like, why? I don't really understand why you're carrying around a rotting corpse. Why aren't you burying this somewhere? Like, it's very weird. But he does, and they do, and they stay together, and they go about doing this. Consciousness of guilt. Does an act like that show consciousness of guilt, or is that just consciousness of concealing something? And he's protecting Kayla. That'd be the argument. I mean, what is there a consciousness of guilt argument here to be had, whether that be hauling the body around or whatever it may be?
I don't think so, because look, the fact of the matter is that one of these two killed her.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, everything that happened after the fact, he's been convicted of, you know, and ultimately at the end of the day, the fact still remains. The problem is that there were two people that could have done this.
Right? Yeah.
You know, and ultimately I don't think that any of the stuff that happened afterwards goes to the heart of who, which one of the two did it. Mm-hmm. I mean, clearly, you know, everything that they did, if all, like, let's pretend Kayla doesn't exist in the world and it's Adam. Well, then, yeah, that's much stronger consciousness of guilt, because there's not this other person that could be the superseding factor.
Yeah.
In that, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, it just doesn't apply the same would if Kayla didn't exist.
You know, I think this case just goes to show too, because I know there's so many other cases that people think there's some genius mastermind behind these things. That's why they're not caught or why they get off. But this is just another great example. You got two complete idiots. One's already out of jail, and this one might get off on an assault instead of a murder. I mean, that is, and because they're complete loser morons with two marbles between the two of them, and yet they're still able to maybe work the system on their benefits.
Crazy. I didn't know that you had the option to not attend your own trial on something like this. I mean, he, if you remember back during the trial, there was days he was there, there were days when he wasn't. Days he was there, he walked in, mm-hmm. stuck his tongue out at the jury. I guess, can a judge say, no, you're not sitting in your cell, we're going to bring you in restraints if we have to? I mean, that's happened before for people who have refused to show up. I guess, number one, why did a judge allow him not to attend his own trial and then just put him on a stretcher and a bodysuit? And is he going to be able to pull that stunt this round?
I mean, I couldn't answer that question. I mean, they can certainly try you in absentia. You know, they do it all the time. If like people flee and they can't find them, they can certainly try the case without them. When you have a situation where the guy's in custody and, you know, I mean, ultimately maybe the judge just landed on the fact that this guy would be such a disturbance in there that he wouldn't have acted in accordance with the decorum that the courtroom requires, that he figured, you know what, if this asshole wants to sit in his cell, fine. We're trying him without him in the room, you know, because I mean, that's your right, obviously, sure. defendant, to be in that courtroom. But, you know, there's nothing that stops the state from trying you in your absence. So,
but does the state have to, can, is it up to the state if you're there or not? I mean, is it truly your choice? If the judge says they're going to be here, cuff them, bring them in, strap them down, you're going to be in this courtroom. Because that would not play well for Adam Montgomery if he's flailing around doing crazy shit. He's going to get convicted. His own best interest is to be lay as low as possible and be as quiet so people can't see the monster that he is in person, that he can't help but being. So I would say, strap him down, bring him in for the ride. That'll play well to the jury. But does the judge have the leverage to do that, I guess?
No, I don't think so, man.
No?
It's like when you just want to get down to brass tacks, you've got the situation we're in. You know, that's why you see defendants in street clothes at trial. You know what I mean? It's like you can't, it's incredibly prejudicial. It's so, like, if they do
it. But he has the option. He can do it the right way.
If they do it in a Hannibal Lecter type style.
But that's his choice. That's the thing. He can come in the right way. He can show up in whatever it is, street clothes or the prison clothes, but you have to show up. You have to come in. If you're refusing to do it, they can't go in, cuff him, and just bring him in. I mean, that we have seen that in other cases. Am I crazy in saying that?
Yeah.
There was strip search dispute on this.
I think you didn't
have to.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to remember if Boone, like Sarah Boone, had the shocker on her leg.
I get it's prejudicial, but it's their choice if they want to. Like, you don't have to show up here like Hannibal Lecter. If you're going to force us to make you that way, then we will. But you can look upstanding as you like.
No, I mean, you can waive your presence.
Damn, there's too many rights for these fuckers. I'm sorry. Hey,
so Bob, help me understand this. Correct me if I'm wrong. He still, though, is serving, right? Because I'm seeing.
Yeah, hold on. I'm listening. I got to let my dog in. He's driving me nuts.
Yeah, you bet. So he's got a minimum of 43.5 years minimum still to serve on the gun charges, which are separate. So at least we got a Murdaugh kind of situation where he's still behind bars for a very long time.
For a while, but he's not Murdaugh age. You know, that's the thing. So I mean, if he gets, there's no conviction here, he likely walks at some point.
I hate that she's out right now.
I know. Well, I mean, that's part of the deal. I mean, I wonder how many they look at the deal going, you know, this has ended up in the best deal
totally
to make.
They totally work this system. Look at this. So she's, in my mind, if you're a couple that's both doing drug-induced crap like this, you're both equally culpable in my mind. She's already out, and he might get off on this, but he's serving 43.5 years, and how old is he right now? I'm looking up.
He's got to be mid-30s, right?
Yeah, so 40-some, you know, so he'll be in his 70s and have plenty of time to go ruin a couple more lives.
He's 36 right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a frustrating case. It really is.
Just look at the three of us. It totally sapped the energy out of all of us. The audience. I mean, out of all the cases we've covered, this and Missy Soto, man, are my two that I
Maddie.
Can't stand.
Yeah. I mean, what's crazier? I mean, the people that do this, or the system that can't restrain the very obvious crazy that's in front of us. You know, that's the question. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Adam Montgomery faces over 43 years on the convictions that still stand, plus more than 32 years on firearms charges. He's not getting out of prison anytime soon. So the retrial isn't necessarily about immediate freedom. It's about whether the system can deliver a murder conviction for a 5-year-old girl whose body has never been found, whose father knows where she is, and who has decided that silence is the last card he gets to play. Bob Mata with his defense attorney. He's got something to say about whether the law gives anyone the power to make Adam Montgomery talk, and whether the answer matters more than the actual retrial itself. Montgomery was offered a reduced sentence at his first sentencing if he revealed where Harmony's remains are. He said nothing. Bob, is there any leverage to that anymore today than there was back then? Is there any legal mechanism that can compel him to disclose her location, or any carrot on a stick they could dangle out there that would be worth dangling? Not like, hey, tell us where she is and you're free, but would it be, I mean, is there anything that makes sense here? Or if he's going to be silent, fine, go rot. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's two different things that were contained in your statement there. One, no, you can't compel him. But two, is there some kind of offer that you can make him to maybe get him to talk? Potentially. But then what does that offer look like?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what type of offer are you going to have to give him to get him to disclose where her remains might be? That's a whole different thing. And, you know, I mean, how much are you willing to give this monster?
What is it worth?
I mean, like that's the dilemma for a prosecutor. It's like, because you could be guaranteed that every prosecutor that touches this case feels the exact same way about this guy as we do. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's their dilemma. All right. Well, like, what are we willing to offer this guy to try to find out, you know, if he'll give up where the body is? And you know, ultimately, if it's too much, then what are you accomplishing, really? You know what I'm saying? So like, they're going to be handcuffed in terms of not wanting to offer him jack shit, because fuck you. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. What's it worth at the end of the day?
Right. Yeah. You know, so, but yeah, there's really no mechanism that Fifth Amendment is going to protect him from being compelled to testify against himself, or, you know, which giving up the body's location potentially could be absolutely viewed as that, because it's potentially the remains are still incriminating, you know, and produce some kind of evidence potentially. So
what do you think the prosecutor is going to do? What do you think they're going to focus on this one?
Oh God. I mean, they're going to have to try it with Kayla as the star witness. She's really the only evidence they have.
Jeez.
In terms of, she's the eyewitness, you know, and they're going to be hamstrung in terms of what they're going to be able to get in the second time around is in terms of the prior bad act. So it's going to really be limited to this one occurrence, you know, and like they're going to have to try to get more detail out of her, you know. But the problem in that situation, like, you know, like, was she moving, like, after he struck her the last time, you know? And if she didn't raise it in the first trial, if you're the defense, you're saying, okay, well, you know, your testimony's changed from first trial to second trial. Why is that? You know,
she's going to be really careful too, because she's going to be so calculated on everything she's saying, because she's so culpable as well.
She already made a deal the first trial. And we don't know the details of that deal, but does that deal survive into the second trial, or is this a whole new deal that they have to make with her to get her to testify? Or could she just plead the fifth and not self-incriminate herself? She made her deal. She did her trial. Is she done if she wants to be, or does she have no choice? Could they come to her and be like, look, we're going to make another deal, or we're going to find new evidence, again, depending on what that deal was,
right?
And we're going to charge you next. I mean, do they present something like that? I mean, it's obviously not the first time a murder conviction is overturned and deals with witnesses that existed in the first trial. Do they carry to the second?
I mean, it depends on the deal.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It completely depends on the deal. Look, she's going to be a willing participant in terms of if that deal did expire after one trial.
Yeah.
That's how the language was written. She's certainly going to say, yeah, I'll tell you, because it takes her off the hook. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, yeah. She's going to be a willing participant in terms of testifying against him again, because otherwise they're pointing the finger at her. So, you know, like, I'm not worried about her if they do need to give her another deal in terms of testifying again, that they'll be able to do it. You know, the question is can they rehabilitate her to the point where a jury is going to buy it in terms of her reliability as to what she's testifying to? And again, you know, you're going to have to front her warts. That's just what you're going to have to do. Yeah. She's never going to be a perfect witness. She is what she is. And you just need the jury to detest her just a little bit less than they detest Adam. You know, because one of the two did it.
Do you need her to convict him, I guess, is the question. I mean, can any of her prior testimony come in where you don't need her to do anything again? I mean, is there a world here where it's like, we don't need you. We don't need your testimony. And guess what? We're going to go after him and we're going to get you too, because we don't need your cooperation to get any of this shit done. You've already said enough.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to call her again. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like they're going to have to get her on the stand again. Without her, what do you have?
I'd be curious about time served and people they served with. I wonder if they can get anyone from prison, any jailhouse calls or anything like that happened since the convictions of both of them that might be called in again. I mean, if you're going to have an issue with her being credible anyway, everyone's going to have an issue with being credible in this circle, because everyone in their circle is complete idiots. And maybe there's cellmates. Maybe there's, you know, there might be more there, just because if you think you're behind bars forever and you're trying to survive because you just did horrendous things to children, maybe your lips were spilling more. Who knows? I don't know.
Or if you think you've made your deal and you're getting off and the game is over and you may be more loose with what you're going to say because you think, oh, they can't get me on this anymore. I'd be very curious to look at every single jailhouse call of Kayla Montgomery while she was serving her time, just to see what might have come out of her lips through that.
You bet your ass they did.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they've listened to every call from both of them.
So I'm wondering, like, do they need her? I mean, or can they, are they like, all right, fine, we're going to kill you both.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I can't see a case in which they don't have her get in there and testify.
So you do have a whole new, so here's what does change in this one. You have, especially with her being released, so she's got another circle of people and associates around her since released, I'm assuming, rather than she's living in a hole someplace. And so there's going to be more people that they're going to be interviewing. There's going going to be some more leakage, hopefully. There's going to be some more details, you know, in hindsight on her part. Yeah. And so there might be more people that, again, it'll be hearsay because it'll be from her stories being told to them. But again, it'll be something at least. And to the one of the audience members asked about the biological mother, she's still very actively trying to seek justice on behalf of her daughter.
Yeah. Civil court hit Adam with that $15.5 million wrongful death judgment, which I'm sure he'll pay at some point.
Yes. I mean,
does a finding like that carry any weight in the criminal retrial? Does a jury even hear about that, Bob?
Well, probably not. I mean, first of all, it was a default, meaning that he didn't even answer the complaint. Mm-hmm. So in terms of, you know, it's not like it was litigated, meaning he just simply didn't answer the complaint. They went in and they got a default judgment against him. So there was no fight. There's, you know, no cross examination. There was, you know, they didn't meet a preponderance of the evidence. So, you know, and something like that is not going to go in front of a criminal jury. It's just not irrelevant as to whether the state can prove murder. So, and it's wildly, wildly prejudicial. So, you know, a giant dollar sign or figure doesn't scream guilty without a single witness being tested. It's like you've got it's not going to come in, you know, ultimately. Mm-hmm. So that's not the answer.
What changes in the equation if they were to find a body?
Well, I mean, if they are able to find a body, I mean, again, and I saw somebody in chat was saying that in terms of tissue, the soft tissue is all going to be gone. You know, so you're basically left with skeletal remains. So, I mean, short of, you know, I'm no doctor.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they'd be able to tell if there was anything tracheal that would be surviving to where they could see if that was crushed, you know, by strangulation.
But then who did it? Yeah. I mean, I don't know there's anything in the body that's going to show you it was Kayla or it was him. No.
Yeah, I mean,
theoretically, not necessarily.
Yeah, you know. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, if they're both with her, there's, you know, potentially DNA on both of them that's going to be with her anyway. Again, I'm just hopeful that loose lips sink ships in this one, where they just got blabby after both their convictions with someone else. Why is it's hard to imagine though that, you know, there's not more after periods of time that you don't, you know, in hindsight and, you know, like the biological mother is still involved, you know, that you're not racking your brain, thinking of locations, going to venues, looking for more things, you know, hopefully between people and things, something might pop up differently this go around.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, that's time has passed, you know, and people get chatty sometimes.
They do.
You know, that is definitely something that we can hope for, that Kayla said something to somebody, you know, one way or another. But if she said something to somebody, the best hope would be that it was incriminating as to her as a poet, you know. Right. She's already saying it was Adam.
Right.
So, like, you know, the hope that we catch her reinforcing that with somebody doesn't really help as much. Mm-hmm. Because at that point it becomes hearsay anyway, and I don't know that it's going to be admissible. It's a shitty set of circumstances
all around. Yeah.
And I'm also just thinking, not just who it's incriminating, but as again, it would take someone, and a lot of people behind bars, believe it or not, are pretty astute and pretty good readers of other people, because they're typically in survival mode a lot of their lives that put them there to begin with. There might be leakage that she's unaware of, or, you know, that whole, I'm still thinking there's a possibility of finding a body because of what she's leaking, whether she knew where it's at or just locations he's frequented. I mean, there's hindsight and blabby mouths with someone who's more objective listening, might add some more light to that. Again, I'm way out front on conjecture and hopeful, wishful thinking, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, that's absolutely right. You don't know, you know, but you would think if Kayla had any idea where he may have finally stashed her, that she would have given it up already. You know, like what, unless she was concerned about incriminating evidence as to her, which
that's what I'm thinking.
If the biologicals have eroded to the point where soft tissue is not going to be an issue. And she feels comfortable enough to say, okay, well, you know, my DNA was around her neck, you know what I'm saying? Or whatever, or over her mouth. And that's why she didn't give it up initially. And if she's like, okay, well, it's going to be all skeletal now, I'll give up where the body is. You know, they're having those conversations with her. Oh, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's certainly conversations that are taking place, but, you know, ultimately we just don't know, which again leads back to that question that Tony was asking, like, is there any way to compel this Jagoff to talk, you know, and there just isn't any way. It's like,
no, like, legal ways.
It's like all the shit, all the shit that you hate about this guy. It's like, he's got it in spades, you know, like everything about this guy is so disgustingly hateable.
And he knows how to work the system.
I mean, he knows the strategy, and he's outsmarted the system, and he knows all of its weaknesses, and he knows exactly where to press and what to do or not to do, which is a lot of what, just staying silent is really what he's using to his advantage here. Because if he can't say anything, then there's less to go on him with. So at the end of the day, I mean, we don't have time to get into it today, but I mean, the bigger thing is, none of this needed to happen. Harmony was in custody. She was in foster care custody, and the state said, you get to go back to your dad who's living in the car, who has a huge rap sheet and possibly murdering other people. This seems like a great place for you.
Man.
That's a whole other... Yeah, but like all 1,000% preventable. But the state is the one who handed Harmony on a silver platter to her Jagoff dad, who then proceeded to kill her. And then the state's like, how did this happen?
It's unbelievable. And I'm having Judge Erskine on Wednesday tomorrow night.
Oh,
we're getting into all that.
Like, this will be good.
It's going to be good. And she is going to flamethrow the system. I mean, like, she is such a huge advocate. And she actually was responsible for getting Harmony's brother's adoption in place. Mm. So she's been involved with the case.
Yeah.
Really. And she's going to have some long, long thoughts on how.
Oh, I got to watch that. Well, and everyone else should too. Defense Diaries. Go check that out. You're going to be doing that on the 17th of June, 26th. Okay.
Yep.
And obviously it's on your feed if you're catching it later, but that'll be very fascinating to watch. Yep. Bob Mata, Defense Diaries. Get it wherever you get podcasts. Just search it, press subscribe, also on YouTube. And the series Buried,
Inside the John Wayne Gacy Investigation. My dad was his lawyer. I have all these weird, bizarre tapes of him prepping Gacy. It's a fascinating podcast. You should check it out. It's not what you think it is. It's definitely not a Gacy tale.
Yeah,
as strange as that seems,
it is. It's unlike. Yeah, it's a chapter you've not heard if you've not checked out Buried yet. So do go and check that out. And Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me. It's available wherever you get books, and available for audio download on Audible or wherever you get audiobooks or regular books. Go check it out and leave a review.
Hey Bob, before you go, everybody's asking what kind of dog you've got, because it was standing behind you and somebody thought it was a deer.
Bob doesn't have a dog.
I do think he is part deer. He's actually half Sharpei, half Siberian Husky.
Can you bring him up? We need to end a good positive note. It was such a downer day talking about this case.
Come and give me a hug. He's like lounging on his chaise.
his
lounge.
He's chilling.
Yeah. Okay, come here. Show the people. He's so beautiful. He's the sweetest
he
guy.
He says no.
Yeah. He's
stupid, bro. And Tony has a Muppet.
Where's my Muppet's down over there.
My guy, there's no picking him up. He's all knees and elbows, man. It's like, he's pick him up off the ground.
He's absolutely huge. He was standing back there behind you, and somebody actually did say, yeah, it looks like a deer.
He actually does have some deer qualities. I was starting to wonder.
And there's Tony's Muppet.
because you need a little happiness after that.
Yeah, as we do.
Exactly.
You need to go touch some grass and pet your pets and love your kids.
A little sweet pup. Yeah, puppies always make things better.
They do.
About that. Yep.
All right. And I'll wrap up today's episode of the program. Until next time, for Robin, for Bob, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.